Hi, this is Linda Tucci, senior news writer for SearchCIO.com. Thanks for joining me. Today I'm talking with Elliot Colon about how to get the most out of your next software licensing contract. Elliot is the founder and president of Miro Consulting of Ford, New Jersey. Miro specializes in Oracle contracts, negotiating a new contract, renegotiating existing contracts. The firm was founded in 2000. The company has over 375 clients under active retainer at last count, the majority of them Fortune 1000 companies. Elliot, welcome.
Hello.
So your firm has been doing this for quite some time, for 8 years. What's the first mistake IT professionals make when negotiating a software licensing contract?
I think that the first mistake CIOs would make when negotiating or managing their contracts is maybe the false belief that their licensing agreement is dynamic and not static in nature, as well as that their contract may hold significant value after a few years, when quite the opposite, their agreement may actually become obsolete in as little as 2 years. And so there's a substantial possible loss of ROI.
Well, why would it become obsolete in 2 years?
Well, the terms and conditions could just be outpaced by certain changes in technology or within the business. Certain requirements and needs of the company may just outpace the agreement and thus reduce the effectiveness of the agreement.
I see. So the company is changing, but the agreement itself is static. So how can you avoid the loss of return on investment or value of that contract?
Well, I think the first thing to do is get a good sense of where your company is going over the next 2 to 3 years in the certain business applications that are driving the requirements for Oracle. It's a good idea to take a look at your own business publications, perhaps your marketing information. In some cases for public companies, a peruse of your annual report could be a good indication of where your company's executive level direction is heading.
Take me through what your firm does when you contract with a company.
Okay, well, it starts with a baseline license review audit. We want to get a good sense of what a client owns, how they're using software, whether or not the client has a defendable compliance position, as well as maybe some of the options that the client may have for certain changes or renegotiation of their agreement. We find almost always clients look at us with quite surprise where they find out what their licensing agreement has and what it has not.
So give me an example of something that they're surprised.
Okay, well, a couple good examples have to do with non-production licensing. And I would say maybe 1 in 5 of our clients, when first reviewed, are surprised as to how they must license their non-production environment. Some are surprised that they have to license them at all. The theory is, or the thought behind it is, why should I pay for development and tests when it would behoove a major software vendor to allow me to develop and test on an unlimited basis so that I could put more applications into production? But no, that's not the case. All licenses require payment and proper licensing. So that's one good area. Another good area has to do with usage rights and the fact that many contracts have very restrictive or limited usage rights to certain territories, certain types of users, certain countries of use. And that's usually a surprise for many CIOs when they may find out that their license grant is very restrictive and doesn't allow them to do what maybe what they assumed it could do.
So that gets us back to also knowing what's coming down the road for your company, being able to see 2 or 3 years ahead. When we were talking earlier, you gave an example of a company that might be negotiating that contract with the idea of, say, 500 employees in Tulsa, when in fact the company is getting ready to expand globally or open up an office overseas.
Correct. Yeah, and we find those examples quite often. As recently as February, a Fortune 1000 company negotiating a contract for employee usage, essentially every one of their employees to use a license, but within their own public-facing documents, we're talking about how there was going to be a divestiture and their company would possibly be split into 2 or 3 business units, distinct legal entities. So obviously buying, 15,000 employee-based licenses when your company is going to be splitting into 5,000 employee, 3 separate legal entities would not be a wise IT investment. So things like that, sometimes the best use of information is found in your own public-facing information.
Okay, so that That's all part of the diagnostic or the audit that you do. How do you begin to build flexibility into a contract that, you know, really is aiming to lock you in?
I think that one of the main items you have to look at is that there is a certain custom pricing, custom licensing that can be developed for very specific needs for certain organizations. If you, maybe the assumption that a price list is your only option is a bad assumption. That there are some flexibilities there for creating certain custom licenses based on very specific usage. As an example, if you're a retailer, you may only need certain spike licensing during certain periods of the holiday time, and there may be some remedy for that in certain custom licenses.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the financial consequences of making some of these mistakes or mistaken assumptions. Can you give CIOs a sense of how much money or value they can lose by making some of these mistakes?
Well, the three big examples that I have are: one, total loss of value; two, non-compliance; and three, incorrect software for a particular solution. And I'll give you an example of each. As far as total loss of value, the scenario where a client buys a license that is limited for a particular application, let's just say SAP as an example, and then decides they want to introduce into that environment software outside of SAP. Well, if their license grant is restricted to SAP and they've introduced even a small application used by only a few users into that environment, it has caused their main contract to be obsolete and valueless. And so that's an example of the loss of value, where a total loss of value, where they now have a contract that they could spend millions of dollars for that they can't use anywhere in their organization.
Okay, so the first point to make is total loss of value, and then your other two?
Non-compliance. And the non-compliance is when bad assumptions are made in regards to the license grant you have. We've had a major electronics company come to us last year, essentially having negotiated a $5 million contract 3 years prior, where the assumption was that they could deploy unlimited users throughout their environment for a particular ERP solution. Now, when we looked at the fine print, it was discovered by us that it was unlimited up to a certain amount of processors. So yes, it was unlimited users, but it was unlimited up to a certain size of the server and footprint. So the client was shocked to hear this news, that they were actually out of compliance, because they had been pushing their business units to deploy under the false assumption that they had an unlimited user grant. So here's a situation where a client owes millions of dollars in fees to obtain compliance because of non-compliance due to a bad assumption.
Okay, that's compelling. And then number three?
And the three is incorrect software for a solution, for a particular solution. And here, a really good example, working with a pharmaceutical company late last year, where they had pointed out very specific requirements for a project they were looking to launch to track prescription and doctor information. And in this particular case, they were looking for a solution for tracking and reporting that information. They actually had the incorrect software purchased. So the past 6 to 9 months, they've basically been incurring support fees and licensing fees for products that were just not the right solution for them. How we would remedy that is being more clear within the software agreement as to what specific functionality you're looking to obtain from the software and how that functionality ties into the business solution you're trying to solve.
Okay, so here's a dumb question. Why wouldn't the vendor with a valued customer point that out?
Well, in many cases, this software is just extremely complex, and perhaps the reps are not completely familiar with the limitations of their own software. So unless you have a technical review and a pre-sales technical resource at the hip with the particular rep, in many cases, the reps are simply positioning product, not necessarily solving business problems or solutions.
Elliot, you raised an interesting point about volume discounts. I wonder if you can explain why they are not always the way to go.
Well, on the volume discounting, one of the big issues is because of the obsolete side of the software that may kick in 2 to 3 years later. I think the vogue now is to consolidate purchases, get purchasing to a volume of so great where you can achieve greater discounting. Now, that may be well and good as long as you've done the proper analysis on your own business to focus on whether you need the software or not 2-3 years later, and have a pretty good confidence level that your requirements are not going to change, and that they're going to be in line with the software and the certain functionality that you're going to be granted. But that's not always the case. I would say more often than not, it's not the case. So what ends up happening is you're achieving a few extra discount points, but yet you're starting support streams so much earlier. So there has to be a pretty good analysis there to determine if those extra discount points that you are achieving are worth starting a support, an annual support cycle earlier than later, and taking the chance that 2-3 years down the road, your requirements are going to still be there for that same software.
You've been really helpful, Elliot, with your advice. Maybe just one last takeaway for CIOs negotiating these very expensive contracts.
Compliance is the key. It's the beginning, it's the end, it's everywhere in the middle. Without it, nothing else matters. So when it comes to a contract, the discussions internally should always start with how do I obtain license compliance, defendable license compliance, how do I maintain it, how do I test for it, and how do I ensure that 2-3 years down the road, I could still defend it and test for it. And it needs to be clearly stated within your agreement how to do it, and you must have a defendable plan. I don't know of one CIO who's ever been terminated from a company because they paid extra points on software, but we have heard of many that have been terminated because they've negotiated an extremely poor T&C and contractual agreement on a large ERP project or large database spend. That's my major takeaway, is it's all about compliance.
Elliot Colon, thank you very much. Really appreciate your advice.
Thank you.